Let's read together Job chapter 39. Here we have the second half of God's first speech to Job. Let's begin by reading verses 39 through 41 of Job chapter 38. Job chapter 38, beginning with verse 39. Can you hunt the prey for the lion or satisfy the appetite of the young lions when they crouch in their dens or lurk in their lairs to lie in wait? Who provides food for the raven when its young ones cry to God and wander about for lack of food? Let's consider some background notes. At the beginning of Job chapter 38, God began the first of his two speeches to Job. Remember, the purpose of these speeches was not to explain why Job was suffering. In fact, God doesn't even mention Job's sufferings in these talks with Job. The purpose of the speeches was to bring Job to the right attitude in his relationship with the Lord. Job was not questioning God's existence or God's power or God's authority, but he was questioning God's ways. Was it really fair and just for God to allow Job, who claimed innocence, to suffer? That was Job's question. And God doesn't directly give Job the answer to his question. Instead, God begins to question Job. With more than 70 questions, the Lord puts Job in his place, so to speak, where Job no longer questions God's ways, and Job's fellowship with the Lord is restored. Now, we saw in chapter 38 that the questions God posed to Job all had to do with the physical world that God had created. Questions concerning geology, geography, oceanography, astronomy, and more questions that Job was unable to answer. 4,000 years or so later, by the way, modern science cannot answer all these questions. Take the foundation of the earth, for example. The crustal rocks of the continents are granite. No geologist today can explain the formation of granite. The theory that granite formed naturally from slowly cooling magma cannot be proved. Granite cannot be made in the laboratory. You can take a granite rock, for example, and bring it to the molten state, and then cool it down with any time, temperature, and pressure scenario that you want, but you will never get granite. You get rhyolite, which is a granitic lava, but not granite. Granite consists of three distinct minerals, quartz, feldspar, and mica, all uniformly distributed in the rock. And it looks like granite is unique to this earth, not found on the moon or Mars, for example. It would appear that granite is a creation rock. So what's God's answer to the modern geologist today who deliberately will not recognize God as the creator? His answer is Job 38, verse 4. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Job 38, 4. Now at the end of Job chapter 38 and in chapter 39, God moves on to ask Job questions about the animal world. And that brings us to our next doctrinal point for this first speech of God to Job. In his first speech, God questions Job about the animal kingdom. In his first speech, God questions Job about the animal kingdom. God begins with the lion, the king of the beasts, and then moves on to the raven in verses 39 through 41 of chapter 38. God's questions to Job concerning the lions with ravenous appetites and the young ravens, which are often forgotten by the parent ravens, is how do they get enough food to survive? The answer, of course, is that God provides them with food. They don't starve to death. Think of the millions of animals that God takes care of each day. Now in verses 1 through 4 of chapter 39, God asks Job to consider the mountain goats and the deer. Let's read these verses. You know the time when the wild mountain goats bear young? Or can you mark when the deer gives birth? Can you number the months that they fulfill? Or do you know the time when they bear young? They bow down, they bring forth their young. They deliver their offspring. Their young ones are healthy. They grow strong with grain. They depart and do not return to them. The Lord's basic question to Job concerning these wild animals is, how do they bear their young in the open field without any problems? The answer, of course, is that for each species, God determines the gestation period, and God gives the ability to these wild animals to bear their young in the field without any doctors or midwives. And God gives their young the ability to stand and fend for themselves in practically no time. In verses 5 through 12, God questions Job about the wild donkey and the wild ox. Let's read these verses. Who set the wild donkey free? Who loosed the bonds of the wild donkey? Whose home I have made the wilderness and the barren land his dwelling? He scorns the tumult of the city. He does not heed the shouts of the driver. The range of the mountains is his pasture, and he searches after every green thing. Will the wild ox be willing to serve you? Will he bed by your manger? Can you bind the wild ox in the furrow with ropes, or will he plow the valleys behind you? Will you trust him because his strength is great, or will you leave your labor to him? Will you trust him to bring home your grain and gather it to your threshing floor? Verses 5 through 12. Unicorn in verse 9, by the way, in the King James Version, would be better translated wild ox. The basic question to Job concerning these wild animals is, how are they tamed? Job says, God, you may tame the domesticated donkey, who is subjected to all kinds of abuse, but not the wild donkey. The wild donkey does not like the noise of the city or drivers shouting at him. But I provide for the wild donkey, says the Lord, both food and a place to live. And what about the wild ox, Job? You can tame the domesticated ox, but try to harness a wild ox to plow your field or thresh your grain. Good luck. I'm paraphrasing. Once again, God's point is that God can take care of all of these untamed animals with no problems, whereas Job could spend a lifetime and have no clue. In verses 13 through 25, we have the ostrich and the horse, and the basic question from God to Job for both of these animals is, why do they act so differently than what you would expect? Let's read about the ostrich in verses 13 through 18. The wings of the ostrich wave proudly, but are her wings and pinions like the kindly stork's? For she leaves her eggs on the ground and warms them in the dust. She forgets that a foot may crush them or that a wild beast may break them. She treats her young harshly as though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain, without fear, because God deprived her of wisdom and did not endow her with understanding. When she lifts herself on high, she scorns the horse and its rider. Verses 13 through 18. Now, when you first consider the ostrich, you would think that she was designed by a committee. She has wings, but she doesn't fly. She doesn't seem to take care of her eggs or young. But her long legs have such power that with one kick, she can rip open an attacking animal, and those long, odd-looking legs enable the ostrich to outrun a horse. So the ostrich was not designed by a committee, but by God himself. And what about the war horse in verses 19 through 25? Let's read these verses. Have you given the horse strength? Have you clothed his neck with a mane? Can you frighten him like a locust? His majestic snorting strikes terror. He paws in the valley and rejoices in his strength. He gallops into the clash of arms. He mocks at fear and is not frightened, nor does he turn back from the sword. The quiver rattles against him, the glittering spear and javelin. He devours the distance with fierceness and rage. Nor does he come to a halt because the trumpet has sounded. At the blast of the trumpet, he says, aha, he smells the battle from afar, the thunder of captains and shouting. How do you explain the fact that a horse, which would normally shy away from the noise and violence of battle, is actually ready to courageously charge into battle and the threat of death? How do you explain this unusual behavior on the part of a war horse, whereas other animals, including other horses, get spooked by such activity. Only one answer is credible. God uniquely designed these animals and their unique behavior beyond human reasoning and understanding. That's God's point to Job here. In the same way, God's dealings with each individual person is unique and beyond our finite reasoning and understanding. Now in verses 26 through 30, God questions Job about the hawk and the eagle. Job chapter 39, beginning now with verse 26. Does the hawk fly by your wisdom and spread its wings toward the south? Does the eagle mount up at your command and make its nest on high? On the rock it dwells and resides, on the crag of the rock and the stronghold. From there it spies out the prey. Its eyes observe from afar. Its young ones suck up blood, and where the slain are, there it is. The Hebrew word for eagle here could also be used for the vulture, which may be the bird in mind here in view of verse 30. Its young ones suck up blood, and where the slain are, there it is. In any case, there are several questions the Lord asked Job concerning these large birds. Job, can you explain the migratory instinct of birds? Can you explain their soaring ability? Where did they learn to build their nests on the high crags of the rocks? And how did they get such phenomenal eyesight? Obviously, Job had no answer for these questions. But God knows, and God controls all the details. And certainly God was in control of every detail concerning Job's situation. In his first speech, God questions Job about the animal kingdom. And that brings us to our practical application for this portion of Job. Consider the ravens. Consider the ravens. In verse 41 of Job 38, the Lord asked Job, who provides nourishment for the young ravens? The obvious answer is God provides for the ravens. In Luke chapter 12, verse 24, the Lord Jesus draws on this passage and said to his disciples, consider the ravens. I'm reading from Luke chapter 12, beginning with verse 22. Then Jesus said to his disciples, therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, nor about the body, what you will put on. Life is more than food, and the body is more than clothing. Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap, which have neither storehouse nor barn, and God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds? From Luke chapter 12, verses 22 through 24. What God wanted Job to learn, he wants us to learn as well. If the Lord knows all about ravens and cares for them and provides for them and meets their needs, does he not know all about us and our situations and our needs? And will he not provide in his sovereign care for us? Of course he will. So the next time you're feeling like God has forgotten you and is not meeting your needs, consider the ravens.